You're watching with us, Davey Book Post.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. April Fool's Day, actually, 2026. Can you believe it? Holy smokes. I think it's Passover, too, and a full moon, so watch out. It's about to pop off. It's definitely nuts on the Iran front. Anyway, I don't think we'll talk too much about that today. Obviously, everything is related. Everything's tangentially related in one way or another. We're actually going to talk about American History Z with our guest here today, Joey Oliver, and we are going to get into why he wrote the book and so forth. Obviously, talking about Generation Z, what's going on? They're getting more extreme. Is this for better, for worse? What's going on? The young men, as far as I read the statistics, is of course getting more radicalized or extreme towards the right wing, while many of the women more towards the left. And then you have a slight division in terms of the older Gen Z versus the younger ones as well, by the way. And of course, it's a generation shaped by very different things than the preceding ones. We'll get into that and talk about that too. But yeah, lots to get into here today with our guest. Joey, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, man.
You bet. So tell us a bit here in the beginning. I guess let me do a couple of just real quick little housekeeping here. Guys, if you do have a specific guest question for our guest today, point, we just want to support the show. Please use DonorBox. I want to remind people about that real quick. Don't use Entropy. And the reason for that is they lost their payment processor. So PowerChat works, Rumble, of course, and anything over five that reads out. I'll probably silent that so we can actually have a conversation without being interrupted, and I'll read those later. But do DonorBox.org/RedEyesTips. We appreciate you guys if you want to support the show and if you have any specific comments or questions or anything like that. So yeah, Joey, with that out of the way, tell us how this came together. You are fairly new with the Right Wing Coalition. That's your kind of username, if you will, on Twitter and on YouTube. I think I read on the blurb for the book, 2025, something like that.
Yeah. So I got started. I put my first video up, I think, in August, early August of 2025. And the only catalyst for it was right in the heart of all the Nick Fuentes controversy. And I'd been following Nick for years, and I kind of understood how the media was framing him that wasn't honest and what they were leveraging their narrative upon. So I just wrote a script that was, you know, the real Nick Fuentes or the truth about Nick Fuentes and put it up. I was like, if this does anything, cool. If it doesn't, whatever. Nobody knows who I am. We'll see what happens. And then it blew up. I think it almost has 1 million views now, and it picked up really quickly. So like within the first 2 weeks, I think I had like 10,000 subscribers. So I was like, okay, this is going pretty well. And then I did a video on Jordan Peterson and kind of his downfall, because that was another narrative that I felt wasn't really articulated in the mass media too well. No, people still didn't really understand what happened to him, why, you know, young men kind of fell away from his influence. And so I put that one out, did really well. And I did no planning for like having this set up as like a real channel or like, you know, a mechanism for media. I just kind of let it lead me along. And then, so I pivoted. Initially, I was just doing breakdowns. I think I did one on Bukele and Sam Hyde, you know, just guys that I'm a big fan of. And then I got more into the actual political commentary, which was originally more practical right-wing philosophy, applied philosophy, you know, in the real world. And then I think it was like late October, I ended up writing a 8,000 word essay, which I titled Gen Z from Liberal to Far Right. And it skimmed this narrative arc of how you could take, broadly speaking, a bunch of young men, start them as default liberals, as we all did, really, and shift to the point where most of us that are on the right are more right wing than our grandparents, maybe great grandparents. And I understood, though it wasn't a story that exactly happened to me. I was much earlier on these things. I could kind of pinpoint the milestones and how they all bridged together to create an actual narrative and not just like a collection of, you know, almost essays within that time period. So I narrativized it and it did really well. I think it got about 300,000 views. Carl Benjamin did like a response to it. And at that point, you know, I maybe had 20,000 subscribers. It was like maybe my 10th video. But anyway, so Arctos reached out, the European publisher, kind of like the New Right, French New Right, and their marketing director asked me, you know, your essays are really good. Would you be interested in publishing them with us? So I said, yeah, absolutely. And he said, well, why don't we start with your Gen Z from liberal to far right? So we did that one, and then it did really well there. I think it's the second most popular article that they've put out. But, you know, while I was thinking about it deeper, I realized that the way I wrote it was very presumptive. Like I didn't apply enough evidence to actually show why the specific change in ideology happened. It was more like A, then B, then C, then D. But I really wanted to prove kind of the actual substance of what I was saying. And so I talked to Arctos and I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about turning this into a book. And they said, I wrote up the first two chapters and I sent it to them. And I said, what do you think? And they sent me a contract. And that was in December. So I think I wrote the first two chapters like December 1st or something like that. And then I used my original essay as the narrative arc, and I applied the structure of the hero's journey to it and filled it out to an entire book with all of the evidence, all of the tweets, all of the articles, everything, because I really wanted to solidify, like, this is not one person's, you know, niche perspective. It really is every headline that's shown in the book, every tweet that's shown in the book was, you know, that day's breaking news. You know, so these are, it's not just a recitation. It is a recitation along with a distinct narrative of how you can go from point A to point Z.
Understood. So let's talk about the mechanics there a little bit. What makes, because, I mean, every generation has obviously new challenges and weird new, like, even technologies, right, that shows up. Obviously just social media alone or gaming or like this very kind of a screen-oriented upbringing where kind of nothing is real, really, right? Yep. In a sense, and that dominates. And I think, again, for better or for worse, I think at the end of that, that's a bad thing. However, in terms of the disease of the modern world and the liberalism, the egalitarianism, this drudge that we've been through basically post World War II, that has been, it's being rejected. For the most part, not always, obviously, as we said, there's the statistics, we can get into the nitty-gritty with that. But regardless, I think even among far leftists, just this desire among younger people generally just to, for lack of a better term, fuck shit up. it's always there, you know what I mean? They're tired of the preceding conditions that were there. And I think it's more true now than ever because of the comfort, the meaninglessness, the, you know, like all these things, right? So those are probably things you would agree with are many of the reasons and dominating reasons for why we're seeing such a, and again, I'm not sure if it's super dramatic, but in terms of the older generations, how they view it, it's probably like, they're so extreme. What's going on? What's happening? Why is this an issue? Right? Would you agree?
Well, definitely. I think your note about the modernism facilitating that rage is 100% spot on. We are in what's called a gilded cage right now. And we don't have a great incentive to depart from it and undergo. I mean, it's like the Buddha story, right? It's very similar in that regard from a societal perspective, because our physical needs are all met, but we're starved of the spiritual.
Correct.
And, but you know, what I frame in the book, especially near the end, is this general manifestation of young right-wing politics right now is not actually radical. It's only radical when it's juxtaposed to an ideology that has fraudulent assumptions about man. But if you remove that, and you take and you compare what I think to someone even in the 1920s, it wouldn't be looked at differently or bizarrely at all.
It's a correction, so actually. It's a course correction.
Yeah, right. So, you know, and it's almost a it's almost hyperbole to say far right, to say radicalized, which I think I omit radicalization quite a bit in the book, because to me what it is, it's a continual stripping away, and I did each chapter almost intentionally like this. It's a continual stripping away of each of the liberal lies. Okay, that one's BS. Okay, what are the implications of that? Maybe you haven't even figured it out yet, but you find out, you know, 2 years later, you know, and so it's not actually the, we're not formulating anything. We are reacting to the fact that reality is not lining up with how everybody said it would have and should have. And it's an adjustment, like you said, a correction.
Is that a risk in that? Or, you know, as you're talking about it too, when the, I mean, that's always the case. That's always the case for every generation, I guess. Radical, quote unquote, radicalism, as you say. In this case, it's the extremism is simply just a correction to the extreme circumstances that we actually grew up in, and the very strange and bizarre, rare circumstances with a, for the most part, lack of struggle and lack of meaning. Right? We've always had that for as long as we can remember. And all of a sudden, post World War II, like history is over. Everything, you know, liberal democracy won out or whatever. And of course, I mean, look at the state of the world now, by the way, putting that in context, but that, but that's a different thing. But yeah, it was like not there. So this is, the extremism is simply just how kind of the boomer generation really views that, and that that's some kind of anomaly. But yeah, as you said, I think it's a course correction, and it could kind of, I guess, swing either way. I think, I mean, I'm not sure if you agree with that or not, but you can see obviously as far-right politics catches on or you know, more extreme right, socialism is getting more popular also among younger generations in the U.S. and you know, the Bernie Sanders type of, you know, AOC type of people, Mamdami, whatever. So you can kind of swing either way. But the point is, we're sick collectively of the middle ground that offers nothing.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I see, especially from the propagation of the left, which, you know, that's been going on far longer, I think, in higher numbers than what we're seeing on the right. But it's a symptom that whatever the status quo is cannot be reconciled. And oftentimes you have people that will preach this return to the 1990s style of liberalism without ever addressing the fact that, you know, that period in time just hadn't allowed the underlying contradictions of the societal foundation to break under its own weight, but it was coming no matter what. And so that's just fantastical thinking, as if we could return to something that would inevitably fail. And that's why what I think I try and do, and certainly many others, is like your foundation, whether it's ideological, whether you're building a building, the strength of your foundation and the consistency of it and its ability to bear the load that gets forced upon it, that is what you have to be focused on. Not some utopian idea of what we could get to if, you know, 10 million different things went right. It's like, why is liberalism breaking down? Because the universal man, the blank slate, is not true. And so when you inject a society of citizens, and the presumption is that the blank slate applies and that everybody can be welded into the same type of widget that everybody else is, when that doesn't happen, the foundation breaks down. So what does that tell me? Okay, like anything, like any evolution, you take what you learned from that failure and you apply it to something new, not return to something that marginally worked in maybe 5 blue cities for 7 years. You know,
right.
like yeah. we're having to deal with the true breakdown of these principles.
Yeah. And even when that egalitarianism did work, is like, well, I mean, Seattle, Maine, what a Portland, like, yeah, they were predominantly white. That's one of the reasons why it worked,
yes.
Because it was homogenous, right? And of course,
exactly.
Stock coming from Scandinavia, Sweden, Norway, these countries, Denmark, right? And So yeah, in a way it does work, but again, that still discounts the basic idea that you can tap anyone into that high trust system, right?
Right.
And say like, yes, it will work, therefore it will work for everyone. So yeah, it's a breakdown of that, of the false reality, of the false you know, kind of narrative that we've been, you know, fed essentially. What else do you think is the reason? Is that the primary reason? What do you think about the technological thing I brought up there too, of just like screens and gaming and so much,
yeah,
kind of being on a screen? What do you think that's contributed?
Well, I think it's certainly contributed substantially. You know, I'm 27, so I surprisingly, and I know that the internet, I think, preceded like early 90s. I think some people had computers, but even functional ones like PCs. But I do remember a world where that wasn't the case. Like, I remember when smartphones came out. I remember, you know, DVDs, or I guess what, VHS. And so I have a little bit of context of knowing what that was like beforehand. And then, you know, when I got my first smartphone, I don't know, it was like 14, 15. Then there was this market change in everything and everyone from there. And I think it's playing its part in Gen Z and probably millennials to this point. But I'm really curious what it's going to do to Gen Alpha and before, because those kids have no perception of what it was like before. And so it's hard for me to even really draw a conclusion on what it's done to me or broadly sociologically, because there is that kind of era one, era two. But no doubt, I think what undergirds all of that in terms of the technological advancements, it's the removal of normal struggle and suffering, you know, in almost every regard. And what we have clearly found at this point is you cannot excavate that out of a human life and have that person derive meaning. But yeah, I think now the question is, because to some degree, if these civilizations remain intact, to some degree, we can engineer out quite a bit of that needless toil, needless suffering. So then how are we going to figure out a way, given that we have to integrate that in the proper ways? You know, like, and this is where, like, I don't have a lot of faith, because how many people are going to intentionally do something that's inconvenient for themselves because they know that the underlying, you know what I mean? You'd have to be very philosophically advanced.
It's a very niche, small percentage that would be even able to understand that, first of all, much less wanting to do it if they understood it. But yeah, I mean, exactly. And that comes in the wake. Well, I mean, again, we'll see. There are so many variables. I think, again, the fact is we're moving into uncharted territory. And of course, that's a good thing. That's an exciting thing, right? When there's finally something on the horizon that's like, we don't know. Granted, maybe they didn't know in the 80s either, but, you know, regardless, end result, 2020 hindsight, we can see that, okay, it was comfortable for many decades to come, right, in different ways.
Yeah.
But now everything is kind of rocking. It's up in the air, and energy shortages, you know, because of the war, like, you know, destabilization, maybe the end of the petrodollar for those in the States, Europe, mm-hmm, security, NATO is crumbling. Like, there's a lot of things up in the air, and granted, it could be kind of in the chaos, I guess, of the moment. I get that there's a function politically or for the establishment to keep people in a sense of maybe fear and uncertainty as a way for them to kind of comply to it.
Definitely.
Really. So,
Definitely.
So very well, that could be, you know, part of the biggest reason for why we're seeing these things. However, it looks like the leadership too that we're having is just, I mean, completely incompetent, and they don't know at all what they're doing.
I would actually contest that. I think that they know exactly what they're doing. I think it's an intentional degradation.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I flip-flop back and forth all the time. Officially, if I just look at it that way, of what they tell me, they don't know what's going on, but my mind has always been, there's always some force behind the scenes that are, you know, encouraging these people or pushing them, whatever. Because, look, again, we'll get back more, you know, detail in terms of the book and stuff, but interesting discussion to have regardless on top of, you know, current events right now. But we know that they've wanted to do the deindustrialization of the West and energy scarcity and all these kinds of things. And this is a way in for kind of the the net zero, if you will, the World Economic Forum type of agendas that kind of been on the back burner a little bit since, you know, Trump has partially been in office and stuff like that, right? But that's always there as an undercurrent. And I think ultimately, if control and subjugation and, you know, restriction, lockdowns, if you will, is there as a political constant by the elite or the establishment, they will find new ways of basically ushering us into that that framework, essentially, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I was always curious at why they pulled back so much on the coronavirus restrictions, because I think there was enough mania that they really could have continued progressing in the direction that they were going, and they pulled back. And I'm not really sure what the tactical move was in that regard, but what it would imply is that that was a practice run in a sense, and it was a test.
That's true. Yeah,
and that they probably didn't have the mechanism to totalize things. And this is actually what I posited in my original essay. From liberals to far right, which is we are in a race. We are in a race between the AI panopticon, the globalist AI panopticon that traces every move of yours, top-down economy, all the above, and a young men uprising, whatever that looks like. I don't see any other outcome because their grip of control even already and the docility that they're able to apply to us through the modern world, I don't see a way of changing the status quo outside of one of those two things at this point.
For us or for them? For us?
General. The general status quo. Either. Right. If they either have to move forward with, you know, you notice what Trump's doing. I mean, he's not revoking the Real ID. He's not making any steps against this digitalization of.
No, he's speeding it up. All the tech bros, exactly. Silicon Valley guys, exactly. The Teal faction in there. Oh, yeah, no, that's his thing.
If you fly back into the United States internationally, you don't even have to have your passport anymore.
Right. It's just all biometrics. Yep.
Come on.
Yep.
And so I see that flowing as an undercurrent. And we all know exactly where that leads, and we know what the justification for all that stuff is. And whether they try and sell you on safety is just nonsense, because you just walk down the street and you just get stabbed by a random black guy, and then he gets freed the next day. So it's not about safety. It's a performative contradiction to say it is. But like, this is why the energy that's being manifested and hopefully harvested that we're seeing in the youth of the right and beyond. I'm not specifically, you know, constraining it to the youth, but that's the only force I see with enough blind rage just on its own merit to destroy and some of the systems that they would want to, you know, sink in.
Right. Let me return, because I didn't finish that point. I realized I was going to say that every generation and the rage or the rebellion of them have been used, you know, to a certain, I mean, again, maybe that's more true, you know, post-World War II. You can go back obviously to, I don't know, maybe the French Revolution really harnessed the younger. I actually don't know that specifically, but you know, that wouldn't be out of the picture obviously completely, but just as the full-on weaponization of the younger generations that happened with, like, you know, again, going way back now, but like MTV, you know, like you know what I mean? Like, I mean, shit like that.
60s.
Right? 60s, obviously, exactly. LSD on the campuses. Like, it was just a full, you know, full on gay op, a psyop, essentially, to totally subjugate the boomer generation. And it worked, right? So I'm thinking, as I'm looking at the dynamic now, have the establishment, the elite, the older generations, and that have in the past weaponized younger generations, lost control of Gen Z, or is it a weaponization of them in a way that we haven't been able to kind of decode yet? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say it's possible, except for the fact that I think that I think I do have a good, I uniquely have a good barometer for the temperature of things, especially on my side of the political divide. And from even guys I've talked to, not necessarily my good friends, but just people in my orbit, it's a consensus almost entirely. And I've heard, and I'm 27, I think I'm the last year of Gen Z, and born 98. And even the younger kids, I mean, it's probably been expedited due to what you were saying with technology. That was the mechanism that they really could get inundated with, you know, the Andrew Tates of the world and thing and influences like that, where, you know, it started to shift things. Now, whether it's being co-opted or whether it's planning to be co-opted, I'm sure something's on the table, right? Because I think this genuinely does scare them. I really do.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they have to be on the watch for it.
Yeah, it would be very strange if they did just kind of drop the ball on it. Even if it's it could be a time of kind of adjustment, I guess, to the new circumstances, kind of in the way that they seem to be kind of be slow and playing catch up with, for example, how kind of the anti-Israel narrative spread on TikTok, for example, like that too. I mean, that damage done already, and it took them a while before right. They actually were able to do it, right? So it could be that little delay on it, but that doesn't mean that they won't, you know, get around to it, essentially. But and of course, then you have the other thing with it as well, where we talk about passivity, right? That you have dropping testosterone levels yes. among younger generations. You have a TikTok brain, as they call it now. It's just, you know, kind of ADHD, constant, you know, stimulation, and can't really keep your attention for too long. And again, it's not that everyone suffers from this, but I'm saying that these are general trends within the generations overall. So the question is how you utilize that, right? Like, okay, they're turning more, at least young men, and specifically the white men, but, you know, more right wing, they're becoming more like they want to do something about this, right? Is there enough oomph, is there enough energy and force here to take charge? What do you think? Or is it going to be a de facto ass, you know, as the octogenarians, what do you call them, in Congress, you know, literally dies off, mm-hmm. you just have a younger generation that begins to take over and eventually will be just be in a place where, like, oh, now it's Gen Zers. What happens then kind of thing? What do you think?
Well, I don't think we're afforded enough time for that, unfortunately. And, you know, I probably think that things are going to happen faster than they do in actuality. But as you kind of understand the game of the elites of, you know, it's like the right and the left hand of the machine that's the dialectic serving its, you know, its progression down the line. I really do think we're in a race between whoever controls the dominant AI that can, you know, infect us with that super state, super surveillance state. A lot of people think that 20, 30 years are going to go by and then we'll be the people in charge and then we can do things differently. But it's not, things don't work that way. Like, we're going to need a black swan event, whatever it is. And it's going to come because the fundamentals that are holding up everything are failing. And I don't see, you know, I mean, look at immigration, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people will say, you know, if London stays at this rate by 2090, they're going to be, you know, 80%, whatever. It's like no trend ever continues linearly, ever.
Right.
So either it's going to go 100% or it's going to go like 0%.
Yeah.
Right. Or what I'm saying, it's going to be some extreme outcome. It's not going to be this, oh, it's going up 2% every year, 2% every year. No.
Correct.
Because
yeah.
Once you reach critical mass in some regard, you've changed the thing outright. And so that actually worries me. Now, in your question about if there's enough oomph to do this, I believe the energy is there. I am concerned about how you organize under the technological constraints at the moment.
Yeah.
That's my concern. Mm-hmm. But if you could organize effectively, I think it's certainly possible, and it'd be probably possible right now.
Because it feels like the advantage, first it was like, oh, the internet shows up on the stage. And again, I was an early adopter. I remember those days, how amazing it was. You could actually find shit that, like, you couldn't find, you know, elsewhere, essentially, right? It was exciting. It was like, you know, mm-hmm. free. And then social media basically ruined the internet. But now there's another, of course, upside to that. And there was another, you know, fun aspect to it. But overall, right, it becomes extremely homogenized. You had the dot-com bubble and the power of the internet consolidated into very few hands, very few tech companies, right? And instead of then kind of the diversity, right, of everyone getting access to it. But regardless, I remember it was a period there where, like, you know, they genuinely fear this. All this information is coming out. People were, you know, learning about 9/11, right? Kind of like looking into the conspiracies about this. And then, you know, the Spurgs had a heyday on the internet early on because it was like all the shit you couldn't find on the West Coast, forums and all that kind of stuff. And then you realize after a certain point of that, and all that's good, so I'm not coming down on that. It's obviously you need to be informed or at least have an opinion or an understanding, I guess is a better term, an understanding of the multitude maybe of angles or theories about, you know, said events or the course of history or who's in charge or things like this. I don't think that's – but then you realize there's also a passivity in endless exposure just to the information itself, right, where like it now causes Certainly. Passivity almost where it's like – you know, people end up in like kind of analysis paralysis and we don't have to end up doing anything. Exactly. So again, it was like it was a great weapon for us. And then it almost felt like the establishment, for the lack of a better term, managed to switch it on us. It was like, oh, you're entertained by this. Here you go. Let us buy aliens.gov. How about that? You like to just throw everything at it to like keep us just kind of in the rat maze, I guess. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's harder for me to contextualize given that most of my time with the internet was more of the basically marketing style of it, right? Yeah. Like everything was gamified. Facebook had things set up to be addictive and stuff like that. So it was always commercialized for me. And that's just kind of the way I always saw it. But I will say that I don't know how any adult parent can really justify giving in to having their kid be on that stuff at this point,
right?
Just given what we know about it.
Yeah.
And I think that, but you know, here's another, like I was saying before, it's those who would intentionally add suffering into their life to satisfy some underlying prerequisite for meaning, like how many people are going to have the discipline to not to boycott Instagram or whatever, you know? It's like,
right. Yeah.
The only way that you could do this would be from top-down legislation. It's the only way. Because
the discipline aspect of this, kind of like you alluded to before, is I think a very small niche fringe kind of faction that can do it. I'd love to see it be that way. Same thing with AI, right? Like if we feel a threat from AI, most people's response to it, of course, is to just like back off and leave it alone or whatever. But the actual, I think, correct approach to it is – no, actually learn it, study it, try to, you know, again, don't be dependent on it. Don't end up in a situation where now you rely on it for everything. Obviously, I'm not saying that, but at the same time, if you don't understand how it functions, you will never fully be able to stand how it will try to manipulate you or take control of you or be used kind of in that capacity. It's possible we won't even have a chance by that point because it might just be at least, you know, at some point, so kind of able to outmaneuver us in terms of its level of intelligence that we still think that we're in charge, but it is totally right. It's like controlling us, right? But I think you're right. I think you're correct in terms we have a window. It's a window of opportunity. It's swiftly closing. And that's why I think we're seeing so many, you know, things globally or internationally or within politics even where it's like a desperation of sorts, right? We got to get this in before the window has closed, right? They're talking about I'll go back to the 2030, you know, Agenda 2030 has been a big thing many people talk about. And again, it's almost like kind of forgotten now because there's been so many other things, especially under Trump in America, right? With like ICE deportations and raids and kind of an open anti-immigration stance or whatnot, right? And these are, of course, great things, right? We've seen like, oh, they're talking about these things now. They're actually doing it, right? However, I'm not sure if you agree with this, Joe, but what I'm seeing now then with the kind of how the Trump administration is being discredited, it's almost like I'm seeing those things being bundled into Trumpism, essentially, and potentially just being rejected wholesale as we go into the 2028 election, the brown wave or whatever it is, right? That like never again, we did this thing with the deportations and do you see what I'm saying? Right.
100%. Well, you know, I mean, I picked up on this a little bit when Minneapolis specifically was happening because There was no argument to be made that the most effective way to wield executive power was for Pam Bondi to send a letter to Tim Walz, right? And yeah. and have these horribly marketed standoffs that entirely made the Trump administration look bad. They were inciting the left to the highest degree possible while getting the
nothing.
Minimal yeah. results possible.
Exactly.
And when somebody's doing the opposite of what they should be doing, it's not like a little bit off, you know, maybe they went to the wrong part of town to do it first. Well, when they take the approach to get that result, which literally would be the worst outcome for them and the best outcome for our, you know, enemy of the left. What does that tell you? Well, obviously they have something else going on behind the scenes, or they're so incompetent. But if that's the case, well, then they've discredited their ability to be there already.
Yeah, right.
And so you do look at those things and, you know, I think I even made that argument that this might be a attempt to move the Overton window back to where
yes.
people stop talking about,
yep.
you know, mass deportations. So
yep.
absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's very strange. Exactly. Yeah. The semaphore piece was like, because again, I think initially it's just like, it's great to have the rhetoric. It's great to have the discussion about it. I saw the old ladies at the RNC standing with mass deportation now signs. And that's a necessary step to just kind of cross the hurdle in terms of your, not that I had it, but many people probably had like, oh, is this, you know, they get cold feet maybe really quickly if they squirmish if they see some of these deportations mm-hmm. happening or whatever. But you got to, at least you have to, you know, recognize the problem first, talk about it, normalize it, right? But then you realize it was like, we've gotten none of it, but the liberal side now then, the liberal press, if you will, have probably an easier time than ever to look at, well, the debacle of everything, obviously, but it presented like as a, you know, super hardcore anti-immigration movement. It presented almost as a white nationalist, you know, America yep. first type of policy, right? There's a couple of headlines, right? We saw how the Department of Labor, the official Department of Homeland Security, with specifically yep. the ICE, you know, accounts were posting kind of this, like, I like to call it like, how a leftist view like Nazi fetish, if that makes sense, like the 1950s yeah. family with an American flag,
yeah,
white,
yeah.
do you see what I'm saying? Like that's the, it was white presenting. And some of the headlines, of course, is like, here's ABC, I think it's out of Australia, but still, like how the U.S. government used white supremacist materials and memes to hire an army yeah. of ICE agents. The white nationalism at the heart of Trump's foreign policy. I don't think anyone will disagree that currently, whatever the plan is, everyone looking at the foreign policy and what's happening now with Iran and the Strait of Hormuz, and had you like, it's a debacle, right? It's a total disaster. And so now you can take all of those things and say, we tried that. Look at what happened when the white man is in charge, everybody. Let's reject that now. And so I can see that it's a super easy pushback towards like internationalism again, or like, you know, opening the borders. Like this can be undone so quickly.
Well,
the few things that was done, right?
Absolutely. You know, another thing that I noticed, which would support your theory there, is the fact that the mainstream media is framing Trump's low approval numbers as a unambiguous denunciation of his administrative, you know, work because he went too far.
Right.
And that we're uncomfortable with it. When in actuality,
he didn't go far
enough.
We want
Caesar. We want Caesar.
Yes.
And he's not.
No.
And so, but you see that if that's what they're going to try and manufacture the narrative to be, so be it. Because let's say, you know, our side of the right, which is not the largest, we're never going to ever get the microphone to contest that anyway. So they can actually just spin that narrative however they want. And then they bring on their, you know, fake right wing guy token. And he agrees that yes, Trump is going too far, you know, and then everyone
yeah.
says, okay, now that's, we're not that country now. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah. At the risk of sounding like someone who thinks that every single thing is micromanaged by an elite or something like that. And of course, it's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible, mm-hmm. but I think they're trying at least, right? So there's things happening in the world. Obviously, there are like unforeseen things, and then there's a course correction, and there's an adjustment, and whoops, let's get, you know, I get all those things, right? But I still think the point, I still think it's at the point that's well made, that like you had two, you know, terms of Obama, and the level of like kind of anti-whiteness that came out of that, yeah, overall from like, you know, 2008 to 2016. There was a genuine grassroots opposition to that. I think there was a you know, you had like the Tea Party forming. You had kind of, I mean, the 3% says goes back further than that, but that's when they, you know, Oath Keepers. Like, there was things like this popping up in the U.S. And I think at some point the establishment realized, like, look, if we, these white people are, for good reason and genuinely, you know, correctly so, getting pissed off here, right? We gotta offer them something or someone. Like, if we don't do it, they will come up with them themselves, you know, kind of thing. And I think that it's a high potential here that, you know, with Trump being bailed out by Wilbur Ross and his relation to Roy Cohn, and of course all the, you know, Chabadniks and the Howard Lutniks and all that kind of backdrop story, they were like, you know, let's he's a good guy for that. He can be the scapegoat, the white guy fall guy here. You know, we can bundle all the genuine white rage into his administration, kind of turn it into a clown show. And instead of having like, because it was an opportunity here. I genuinely think so. There was an opportunity to do things professionally and correctly. Go after the employers, just like the Semaphore piece said there, right? With the deportations, go to the farms, the hotel, like, you know, where all these people, the meat packaging plants or something. Don't turn it into this kind of theater in the inner cities where, like, for all the protest and shit show in L.A., I think it was something like maybe 10,000 people at the end of that. They got, you know, criminally illegal aliens, managed to deport. What was the yield? What was the outcome from that? So anyway, at the risk of just sounding like everything is controlled, don't even try. That's not what I mean either, obviously. But I'm saying, hindsight, I can kind of see that's how, regardless if that was the plan or not, that's kind of how it's played out.
Yeah, right? You can connect the dots for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, it's very interesting. I think it's an interesting time because we're seeing things happening with Iran and kind of a decoupling from Europe, which is an interesting thing for me too, looking at European nationalism, how Europe will be able to rise up, because undoubtedly the same forces that have occupied the American political system has obviously been restrictive in Europe as well, right? We're all suffering from having an elite that ultimately don't care about us, right? And so the NATO system, America being dominant in terms of like the international pressure through NATO, obviously in Europe, but other things as well, the petrodollar and things like that. Looks like all of that's kind of, I'm not saying it's will implode tomorrow, but it's like the credibility of America internationally too is kind of crumbling, wouldn't you say? Like,
totally.
Is that the play? Totally. Is that the intention, do you think? Or what do you think they're playing with there?
It kind of seems like they've set Trump up to be, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in the last like 20 years, 30 years, probably the classic family sitcom had, you know, the stupid dad that the mom had to correct on everything. And he was just a bumbling idiot.
Right.
And they're trying to, it seems, whether they did this intentionally or not, they're having Trump fit that archetype. And then giving him the position of the most powerful man in the world to then destroy our credibility and destroy men's credibility and say, like, this is what happens when that's what your apex man is. And he's an absolute moron. You know, it's like we may come out of this and Trump may have wrecked the American reputation more than Joe Biden.
Yes. Which is something.
Which is just astounding, if that's the case.
The point is, it's getting worse and worse and worse. No matter how we try to fix things politically or like people, let's vote for this guy. It just gets worse and worse.
And I think what pervades our society right now in the West, particularly in America, is just this lack of accountability, this lack of responsibility, and this misunderstanding about where are the levers of power. They must exist. Things are moving. But when Biden comes out and he like can't even say his name on a live debate and, you know, struggles to get off of the stage, who's running the country then?
That's it.
Because it's not him, but we don't even know that.
No.
You know, and I think we're all suffering from this this like starvation for, we just want to know what is actually happening, you yeah. know?
Well, and really. And I think the powers that be, kind of a gay term, but let's use it. I'll allow it. They thrive in confusion and in uncertainty. Totally. And, you know, as I said before, going back to that point that, like, with that kind of chaotic conditions or whatnot, people do generally overall end up kind of in a fear mode. I can even feel, as much as I like to kind of analyze things or whatever, like I was looking at energy markets, fertilizer shortages, and again, like this, like, shit, you know, what this could turn, maybe they'll do it this time. You brought up the COVID stuff. And I think it's hard, right? Because in one way you can argue the problem is they didn't go far enough, right? Because if they would have gone far enough and actually pushed people over the edge, I think we could have actually gotten somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm
yep.
saying? But totally. They did. They pulled back just in the right time to make sure that that didn't happen, you know?
Yeah, and then they retcon it too, right? As if it was all, well, we didn't know what was going on. We just had to take extra precautionary measures. No, sorry. That's not what you did.
Just 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Just 2 weeks to we're gonna bomb Iran. It's always this, it's these same memes that keep repeating with this time loop. You know,
it's like what the hell is this? they can't even. I mean, it's insulting that they can't even update their propaganda.
No, they're not very creative in that way, are they?
I think it's a humiliation ritual to say
it feels
we
like
can
it sometimes.
Get you again and again and again with the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you guys aren't going
to
do anything.
What are you going to do about it? Exactly. Well, it goes back to my point of all the information, right? The kind of thing. But what's happening, right? Well, what do we do? You know, what are we doing with it? And things are slowly degrading and slowly getting worse. Now, I get it. It's hard, right? Even for, you know, the few that kind of have that vision or whatever to, you know, go into battle by yourself before you've organized an army is not just, you know, that's just, you know, there's nothing brave about it. That's just dumb, essentially, right? So we are binding our time. We're trying to... as your name of your channel on YouTube implies, build a coalition, right? Like of actually, you know, strengthening our numbers and getting to a point where we realize, okay, either, you know, again, I've given up much, you know, a lot more like trying to salvage something on the national stage, but I'm thinking more locally now, smaller, where people are at, you know, trying to build something kind of from the ground up and foundations. Do you think that's something that is a driver within Gen Z overall, or is it, because when I'm looking at it from the outside, it's been this, and it could be misdirected. I know there's many different views on this internally, obviously, as it always is, but it was like this, we'll kind of infiltrate the political system. We'll put our guys in place. We'll try to, you know, steer the ship in this kind of direction. From the outside, that feels what has been a part of the objective of Gen Z, of like trying to take over the political. So maybe that's just Fuentes, you know, he's like, yeah, he was driving that line for a while. It's like, we'll put our guys in place, we'll cooperate with these people and kind of nudge our way in there.
The problem with that is if you don't understand where the levers of power are there, then you don't have much of a plan. You know, it's one thing if you if you understand the general hierarchy of a certain company or corporation and you know, the scope that each position is responsible for, and you know what you can do functionally when you get into that position. But I don't think anybody has a clue of any of these positions, what the extent of their power is, what the extent of the control behind it is, what the extent of the blackmail is, all of that. It's a total wild card. So that, to me, that approach strikes me initially as a bit not cowardly, but not probably forthright enough
or naive,
to actually
naive possibly?
It's probably willfully naive, because you can't actually articulate a plan besides like, well, maybe when we get there we can do something, we'll see. Not that your plan has to be totally like dotted out perfectly, but you do need to know like if A then B, you know,
right?
To actually give you some direction. Now I think what we were talking about previously about the youth and culture more generally, I think the way that you would incite, I mean, the way I conclude my perceptions of, as you were saying, over the years, over the different revolutions, over the different societal episodes of turmoil, they have all capitalized on the youth, often spreads to workers, you know, and then that's where you get your massive body. Now, the only way that I can see doing that in the modern world is if some form of pop culture can get taken over by the right. And my comparison would be like, imagine a right-wing 1960s movement.
Right.
Because you can't, like, intellectually and argumentatively, what we say actually doesn't move the needle for most people. You have to give the feeling. And you have to be already put on a pedestal so that you have people looking at you and want to hear what you have to say regardless. Like 8 months ago, you wouldn't have even wanted to hear what I had to say because I have nothing backing me. And so if we can find a way, whatever that looks like, some type of scene that's prominent. And I do think the political commentary stuff, I mean, Fuentes is proving it. Tucker's proving it in his own right, that there is a great appetite for that. But can you mobilize that into actual action? Because if we do not, and we remain in the underground, we will always have the dismissal from the mainstream. And you almost have to be too talented to where you can't be denied. You know,
right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, the issue has been that the rot inside of the system, right, seeking legitimacy. I get it in terms of popularity and then to grow your numbers, right? But seeking maybe not just legitimacy within the system, but like any type of influence or recognition or like getting a foot in through the door in some type of mainstream kind of institution or media, whatever you want to call it, right? The problem with that is like, it's run by like Epstein pedophiles, essentially.
Well,
right?
Exactly.
Like, so, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, well, how do you will not, if you don't compromise to that and to them, you will not get into that world. You see what I'm saying? So,
no, I,
you know, but I think what you're saying is, I'm not saying that's what you're saying, but that's the problem with that, you know, approach to it. So, what you are saying, if I'm hearing that correctly, is like, it needs to be outside of that. But at the same time, for it to get popularity and recognition and notice, you still need to tap, do you see what I'm saying? Or at least you need to off the mainstream enough, I guess, to get attention, right?
Yeah, or you set up some, this is why I say like, whoever these people are have to be so talented that they cannot be denied because they would have to do it externally, to your point. But I think with the mechanism of the internet being such a great facilitator of, you know, information, you could do it through there. But again, this comes down to what is the extent of the control mechanism already in place? We don't even know that. So maybe it's totally not possible at all. Maybe they'll just cut. But, you know, I mean, I've grown pretty big and no one's come after me. So it can't be like a complete clamp down, you know. So I'm optimistic in the sense that I see a way. It's not hopeless in my eyes, but I don't even, because of how the government is situated here, I don't even know how you could transfer powers to basically a single executive.
Yeah, no, you know? I don't think you can in its current kind of configuration, right? I think it's impossible.
Well, not through its channels, but I mean, even if you didn't, like, even if you subverted it, whatever you did, like what Gaddafi did in Libya or something like that.
Look at what happened to him, right?
Yeah. But I don't even know. I think we're all so in the dark on the actual mechanics of everything. And that's by design.
Oh, no, definitely. Absolutely. You mentioned, it's an interesting thing because I know you brought up Peterson. You have a thing on Rogan in the book, right? I was watching your video on your YouTube about Tucker, and I think we share some concerns here. And I mean, from our point of view, you said no one has come after you. So we've been doing this for a long time. We had 333 subs on YouTube, banned, debanked, deplatformed, can't use payment processor, completely pushed out of basically everything, right? So censorship works. That's the first level to it, right? Now, we're still here. We have a great audience, we're very supportive and whatnot, but it's true, right? There's no reason to deny it that if we would have been on the YouTubes and have access to what other people like Candace Owens or Tucker Carlson or, you know, any of these people have access to in terms of their YouTubes and payment processors and reach and all that stuff, we'd probably do pretty well and be out there even more, right? But I think it goes back to something fundamentally about authenticity, and you're bringing this up in your video about Tucker, right, of him basically being one of these people's champions that continuously – they need to put these individuals in front of us in order to offer us someone that can, you know, address your concerns and speak to you or for you. But then at the same time, go maybe as a Tucker in that case, go right kind of up towards the line where kind of the acceptable line is, and even kind of cross it in some regards, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not really offering you the solutions to what would get us out of that situation. And what I mean by that, I want your take on this, obviously, but we just did a segment for one of our Western Warrior shows, and we had a, you know, we kind of wrote down our main critiques of Tucker Carlson. And to briefly reiterate that, it's basically, I'll summarize it like this, as short as I can. He's doing great work in, like, obviously now with like exposing Israeli stranglehold on American politics, you know, Zionism, these kinds of things, right? Which is great, fantastic, right? But he's had this continuous denunciation of anything that has to do with, you know, ethnic kinship and
yes.
white
yes.
nationalism or yes. white people organizing and taking back our power, which I therefore think at this point makes a Tucker Carlson one of the most dangerous people that we have out there. I agree with him on many things, but his, and ironically, when he's attacked by a Mark Levin or a Laura Loomer or a Randy Fine, whatever it is, a Chuck Schumer, whatever, whoever it is, that actually grants him and gives him the authenticity and credibility that is so much necessary for a Tucker Carlson right now, right? I know you have a lot to say on this, but yeah, share your thoughts on this.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely the case. And I think wherever Tucker is probably the indicator of where they're allowing the conversation to be at any given time. And, you know, I have two theories on Tucker. One is that he is good faith and he really is, you know, America first, really trying to do XYZ, but he can't because of the position he's in. He's too big to break from all the other, you know, conditioning of everything else. But he's trying to do things behind the scenes. But what my problem with him is fundamentally is he will preach things like authenticity and honesty and then totally lie or totally omit things that he, you know, when he was saying that Nick Fuentes was the person that told him that his dad was in the CIA. Are you kidding me?
He didn't know that before?
Yeah. And then, you know, like, he's what, 56? Oh, he just got smart to Israel a year and a half ago?
Nah.
Boy.
No.
He's
an acceptable steam valve. He comes from the mainstream news world, Fox News. A lot of these people actually do now. If you look at the main, that was the trick they did on the internet, right? We had this is our... Anyone can speak now on the internet. Everyone can have a voice, you know, kind of thing. But what happened? Most of it has been replaced. But, you know, even a Russell Brand or say, like, you know, these types of people, right, that they kind of wheel in front of us mm-hmm. to, like, here, mm-hmm. have your – I mean, even Steve Bannon, right, as some kind of, like, outsider when everything we've learned about how his close relationship to Epstein and all that stuff, right? Then yeah. he goes and does his shows raving about the global pedophile elites and stuff. And he's like, we learn he's like one of the best buddies with Epstein.
Yeah.
And so
unreal.
It's totally unreal. It's unbelievable, right? But so they've like packed, they're taking up all the air in the room. And I get it. This is not some like, this is not me saying a referee should come in here and blow the whistle and give, you know, these people a foul. Look, I get that. That's not what's going to happen. I'm just observing like, they're pushing these individuals in front of us, and they are not banned. They are not censored. They are not restricted. People talk shit about them, but that gives them the credibility. In a world desperately where they know that there's so many fake oppositions and controlled narratives and stuff like that, the only way you can really kind of create that authenticity is to attack them the way a Randy Fine attacks a Tucker Carlson, for example. That lends him that credibility that he so desperately needs. And that's hard for people to figure out. I get that, you know?
Yeah, and you know the fact that he's never had a bad word to say about JD Vance, but like JD Vance right. really is kind of a fundamental lever in that whole operation. Something's off.
Something's off. Oh, 100%.
I don't know what. I really don't know what, but something is certainly off.
When you can have a Tucker so astutely and correctly recognize the demographic issues and we're brought to the brink of extinction in terms of our demographics and replacement migration and all these things. When there's this look, if he has some plan to slowly drip feed his audience to get him to a point where, you know, one day he just like will just drop it and just say like, hey, look, white people, we just need to organize kind of thing, right? Okay, respect to him then. But at this point, I'm not seeing it. And therefore, it becomes a job of people like me and so many others out there that are still kind of, you know, we're here, we have an audience, but we're more obviously much more marginalized than a Tucker Carlson and some of these other people. We have to push on them hard to say, why are you not talking about the solutions here? Why are you so hostile? I don't know how many clips I've played with Tucker. Well, you know, they want to, really what they want. I forget what it was, TPUSA event or something. This is a while ago, but it was up on stage with like Tim Pool and it was, I think it was Charlie Kirk and some other people, right? And they were talking about like how the elites really kind of secretly want white people to, you know, cooperate and work together and start, you know, pushing back against it. Just like, no, that's the furthest from the truth you can possibly get. Like that's what they're most afraid of. And that's what they're trying to prevent, right? So I'm not seeing that like, okay, well, fine, point out the problems, but what do we do? What do we do about it then?
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm sure you've noticed this. I can't remember who made this perception, but they said essentially that the problem with the right is everybody wants to be the next complainer in chief. They want to be the next Rush Limbaugh, but nobody wants to actually take on responsibility and accountability and do anything of substance. And I was talking to Kevin DeAnna about this too. It really seems to me like a lot of the prominent people on the right, and I would say more mainstream on the right, not like dissident spheres, they, despite what they will tell you, their ideal outcome would be the New York Times coming out and writing an article about them that says they're actually not so bad after all. What did Marjorie Taylor Greene do right after she left MAGA? Tell all to the New York Times. And so they're captured by this. They're desperate for this legitimacy to be bestowed upon them by these old gods, these old institutions. And I don't think that certainly my cohort is totally divorced from that, most fundamentally. But, you know, no one's selling any solutions anyway. And that's what we're desperate for. And that's our challenge to the people like Tucker and others of, I can't just keep listening to podcasts about you reiterating the same point with another guest, you know, that contextualizes nothing. And also you pull back right when you would make any declarative statement that would actually apply the principles that you say you believe in. That's what bothers me the most. Like they won't even take their ideas to their logical conclusion, you know?
Right.
So then what are we even doing?
Well, that's just it. What they are doing then is to distract us and string us along for as long as possible so that we will not actually get out of the hole that they're digging for us. And that's why I think it's that. Well, it's the same thing. You know, she's done great stuff in the past, obviously, but Lana just did a video on Eva Vlaardingerbroek, by the way, when she went on Tucker. Same thing there. I'm trying to find the video here.
I couldn't. When he asked who's doing this? And
yeah, said, and it was like nothing. I even would have... Not accepted, because I think that would be technically wrong, but I would have, what am I saying? I wouldn't have criticized it as hard if she had said, like, well, it's the Muslims doing it then, or like the World Economic Forum or the UN or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there was nothing.
I have no respect for her at all.
No, not at this rate. Absolutely not. It's strange, right? But then you realize these are the voices that have then become, you know, kind of the people's champions, and they're going to address these issues for us or whatever. But like, why can't you just say white nations for white people? Like, white man, fight back, folk first, get organized, get active, start organizing locally in your community, start pushing back, do what you can. Right? There's it's very little that has to be done in terms of the rhetoric in order to just kind of make that switch happen in their audience's mind of like, yeah, they're right. Like, we should start organizing the way every other ethnic group is organizing inside of our countries. Yeah. Why not? Right? Why is this such a crime? And Tucker goes back to this like ideological thing, almost like this. I know he brings up his religion quite often as well. Of like, still this kind of Episcopalian egalitarianism kind of weaved into that critique, right? That almost the critique of Israel might not, is almost more over like kind of religious reasons. And if there's a, I get it if you're of his religion, but there's so much more you can say. Like, these are also people that are like, they're running international organizations that are designed to replace white people in Europe and America, like HIAS or like Israel.
And it's not ambiguous.
No, it's absolutely not. And this is not hard to figure out. You can find this really easily. You know what I mean? Especially these days.
Extremely. Yeah. And I mean, that tells you just about everything you need to know on it. Because if they're ignorant of that, then they're like declaratively retarded. So then why are we listening to them at all? And if they won't say it, that means that they have another master.
Yes.
That, you know, doesn't actually care about solving the problem, which would imply that it's probably that person, you know.
And I think that's about the trends of these things. Going back to the point that in the same way that they provided kind of a Trump to derail those things, the same way they provide champions and, you know, steam valves that can release the pressure. I mean, Tucker even he did write that book, right? Ship of Fools, which was like, he's, as you pointed out in your video, it was great job of, you know, pulling that together of him being an elitist, you know, a trust fund, you know, baby. He's never had a hard, and you know, time in his life, really, as far as we can tell, more than maybe now than or something. But even the persona that you said, that it's this very, hey, I'm gonna go fishing now, and here's my log. You know, this performative kind of way it's that so he puts on the everyday man type of costume to try to appeal to like the outdoorsy American white man or something, right? That's what it is.
Exactly.
It's performative.
Totally.
So he's trying to do that in order to stay relevant and be a guy who can be there and hold you. I think the point I made in the segment I just recorded on this was, he will hold you in your hand and lead you towards you and your and our children to the door of extinction. You know, and just like, well, it's all right. I'm right here with you. You know, but it's like, can't we do anything about this? Can't we? What you know? And it's not much that would have to be said. You know. Anyway, maybe I'm harping too hard on this, but it frustrates me. I mean, legitimately and honestly, this is
I drove like 4 hours to go watch Tucker speak when he was on the campaign trail for Trump. And I was like, I mean, this is like, what, 2 or 3 years ago. I was like, you know, because the rumors about Tucker being some agent or whatever it actually is independent of the label for it. But in my head, I thought, well, if he is, then they're so good at this that we should probably just give up, because this guy seems like he really cares. He's really authentic. And then the next 2 years, it just pretty much falls apart if you're paying attention. So, I took it personally almost of like, he had me for a little bit, you know?
No, definitely. No, I get it. Sorry, just taking a sip of water here. Yeah, no, I get it. So we got Tucker. What? Tell us a little bit about what you wrote about Rogan, because I see him very much in the same way. Yeah. Like Spotify contracts, hundreds of millions. I used to go on a network. I think it was called, what's this? Truth Stream. Not media. That's another outlet. What was it? It was something to that effect. It was something Truth, something broadcast or stream or something. Anyway,
is that where his original one was on, or what?
He went on there as a guest. I forget if that was the original, but he went on there as a guest number of times. And I even forget the guy who ran it now. I had him on the show a couple of times, and he had me on his show a few times as well. It was like early days. He was into kind of he's always been obviously like the acid, the LSD, the mush, the shrooms, you know, kind of thing, right? And it was one show in particular where we had a guest on to kind of talk about like the CIA backdrop to like pushing drugs and pushing psychedelics and stuff. And again, it's not a wholesale dismissal that there's like nothing there. Maybe there's an application there, but regardless, the point was to bring it, you know, to the attention of people listening that it's like, hey, here's like a Joe Rogan back in the day before he blew up like the way he did on YouTube with the show. But he was in Fear Factor. He was a host. Again, mainstream TV personality type of – he's come from that world again, which is – I always find that interesting, right? But he was pushing these things about like drugs and DMT and, you know, all these kinds of things, kind of alternative history type of topics and stuff. And I've enjoyed some of that myself. I've covered some of that myself in the past, going way back. But anyway, he went out hard, I think, after Lana, because she had one who interviewed Jon Ervin, who came out and speaking up against Joe Rogan about all the drug, you know, the drug use, and this is some CIA front op or whatever. But he came out, he ended up, of course, kind of blowing up, getting these massive Spotify deals, hundreds of millions. But he became like a spokesperson for all those ideas. And I think it's a lot of, it has a lot to do with who says it. Not even, in some cases, not even what's being said, but who says it, right? So we can't have someone who can go off the rail that we don't control, that we don't have a hold over or something like that, because they can go off and all of a sudden they start giving people actual ideas about stuff and what can be done. Do something.
Well, kind of speaks to what I was saying earlier, where, you know, the argumentation of it doesn't really matter. It's the underlying message that you can sell, and that's almost inextricable from the person selling the message.
Absolutely.
Right?
Like, yeah.
The you as the medium are the message in many regards, if you're playing an angle. But the way I spoke about Rogan in the book, I framed the Rogan sphere of like 2015 to 2018, 2019, which was the intellectual dark web. But I framed it as, in accordance with the hero's journey, this is your meeting the mentors phase. So broadly speaking, generationally, you know, we've got like Jordan Peterson comes in, and, you know, just as Trump offered us authenticity in his, or what appeared to be authenticity in his 2015 run to ultimate election in 2016, Peterson offered us a spiritual side of the world, which up until that point, we had only understood the world through the mechanical lens that it had been applied for us throughout our childhood. And Rogan was the consolidator of all of those characters. And they basically, and this was clearly done intentionally, because Barry Weiss in the New York Times was the one that essentially anointed them as the intellectual renegades of our day.
Right.
And what that did fundamentally was it positioned them in a manner that gave them legitimacy amongst the broad populace. But they were just deviant enough from the, they were just heterodox enough to kind of instigate some interest by like young men, because we were seeing something that from our perception was oppositional to the extremely leftist gay culture at the time. But what we found in this journey, and there was very many things that played this out, but their reaction to, because they founded themselves and they promoted themselves as these classical liberals. I'm a free speech absolutist, you know, no government tyranny. I'm a free man. Well, then the coronavirus comes around and almost all of them buckle right away. Then George Floyd comes around. Almost all of them buckle right away. Mm-hmm. You know, then Biden comes around, and then you have Sam Harris saying the adults are back in charge. And, you know, Trump is the most deranged maniac that's ever lived. And then what we found was they weren't actually addressing the real consequential questions. They were fine at giving us kind of a broad rundown of how, you know, you shouldn't trust the man, but they were not ever dealing with, you know, realities of like, are gender differences distinct enough to warrant different treatment between the two? Are racial differences different enough to warrant different treatment or separation between the races? Never hear them talk about that. And so what we found, I think, beyond 2020, probably beyond 2022, really, was that these guys had been almost like the opposite of a Trojan horse. Like, they weren't ushering in anything new. They were trying to dam the water for us to not go further. They wanted to stop us right there.
Yes.
You know, as you guys are classical liberals and you believe in the vision of the founders, and really you believe in the Civil Rights Act. That's your constitution. But, you know, as we got exposed to more, especially with like the rise of Tate and Fuentes, we understood that we had kind of been sold diet masculinity is how I described it. And there was no integration of bringing those ideas to their logical conclusion. Like Jordan would basically say that, well, men and women are different, but women should still be able to do absolutely anything they want and have a career and have kids, but they'd be happier if they didn't. And we got fed up with this whole shilling game of like, what do you, if you're putting forward ideas that contradict the status quo presumptions, but you're not actually saying that there should be any deviant conclusions to come from them, then what are you playing? You're just playing a shell game. And so we discarded all those guys. And hey, I haven't listened to Rogan in years. But I think for the time, they did capitalize on quite a bit. That energy that we were talking about previously, like at that time, that energy was certainly blossoming. And I think it got taken and like cooled down under their supervision.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about this, but it's an interesting thing that you bring up there, because there's two aspects. One is the dark enlightenment, was that what it's called? The dark web of the enlightenment? What was the full
intellectual
term?
Dark web.
Intellectual
them,
dark web. That's yeah. What they used.
That's Curtis Yarvin right. Was dark enlightenment, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because, again, tangentially related to that whole crew, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting enough of that, this is like a... This is always what it's been. This is the same thing going back to how you hijack revolutionary spirits among younger generations. Yep. Then it's like, hey, this Marilyn Manson guy is really dangerous and edgy, and you should definitely not listen to him. Like, you're just promoting him now. Like, you know that, right?
Right.
And this is the same thing here, really. Like, you definitely don't want to listen to, like, Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast, because that's, you know, that's so edgy, right? Or whatever. Or, you know, Dave, what's his name? Oh gosh, he was with the
TY. Dave Rubin.
Dave Rubin, yeah, exactly. Dave Rubin, or like these trigonometry, Constantine Kissin.
Oh yeah,
God Saad, right? Which came out like he's just an open like Mossad agent. I'm not sure if you saw
that
clip.
Video was so funny. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what?
Like, okay, all right, this makes
sense.
He
would always joke and he'd be like, "Oh, I'm a Mossad agent." Apparently, right. Comes out like.
No, actually, I am. I was actually approached exactly. It's like, okay, now I know why this fart was astroturfed in the way that it was. Like, it makes sense, right? But it was so they spend a lot of the time, as you said, yes, promoting like classic liberal ideas. But at the same time, you kind of had a setup of the whole woke shit, right? Like where the bar is now so low in terms of your level of critique against something that is genuinely a problem and being shoved down our throats, right? Like, yes, let's, put your kids on hormone blockers and cut their obviously this is a huge problem. And it did happen. It was not like just a figment of our imagination, but I almost saw it as an invention to keep, you take 100 steps forward and then they go, 3 steps back and then they see it as a kind of a ideological victory, right? Like,
you're saying that they have to give that alleviation of pressure, even if it's slight, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying like, they pushed something, these woke liberal ideas, so hard so obnoxious, and so many obnoxious one of them as well, that ended up taking the majority of the energy or the focus.
Yeah.
So that the critique didn't now become about, for example, it became less about demographics. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, and it became more about just like kicking out like, drag queen story hour time from, libraries or whatever, which I obviously agree with, but I'm saying. But when that was scaled back, then it was like, oh, phew, glad that's over, everyone. Yeah. Okay. Well, but we won out, we're back. And it hasn't gone away, by the way. That's it. That's a whole other thing. But DEI, right? That's because that was the big attack from the Trump administration partially, right? DOGE. We're going to root out all these USAID gay programs. They're running like some tranny theater in Albania or so, like shit like this, like crazy stuff that shouldn't obviously be happening, right? But you have all these, just a setup, right? A red herring, if you will. They just set, to distract you, a decoy of sorts. Set all these things up and let the focus be on those things. And then the underlying factor of in a way, how we ended even up there has not fundamentally been addressed or changed, right?
Well, how many years was the predominant political discussion literally over trans bathrooms?
Exactly, right.
I mean, the way I see that is that's if you're succumbing to that frame perpetually and never moving ground, you are like your feet are in quicksand and they're just running around you because the right previously, the mainstream right certainly, was continually defensive. There was no even, I don't even think they had a positive vision at all. And so they get caught up in these debates over things that are actually inconsequential to the general trajectory of society. Obviously it's important, but it almost seems like a red herring in itself that the right just doesn't know it's a red herring and they get caught up in it because it's so absurd. And they're like, we can definitely win this because it's so absurd. And then they spend 3 years on it, not knowing that the person, you know, in front of them has just a ideological devotion to never give in and pretend to misunderstand everything for however long it takes.
Yeah.
That seems like what it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, it definitely does. They can keep kind of, cutting down some of the leaves, trim the leaves from the branches, you know, but never really strike the root and go after what the main issue is, like what enabled the woke to begin with, or how was that even possible, right? So instead they have this, you know, kind of faux attitude towards, addressing issues without fundamentally going to the root of it. And as soon as you do, then it's, of course, lots of kvetching and, we can't go there, you know, kind of thing. So I think it's, I think it's pretty clear of how the setup has been, which takes me back to the point of, and again, this doesn't mean like, oh, it's all control, I'm giving up, obviously, but it's a continuous exposure, it's a continuous effort, struggle of sorts, right, to just keep things on point and keep things relevant. And because there is a sense of urgency to go back to some of the things you talked about earlier, right? They have a window, but we have a window too, obviously, in terms of demographics. What's going to happen? How is this going to play out? Our kids are growing up minorities now in many of our countries all throughout the West, right? This is a huge and major issue. And as much as I hate tranny bathrooms, that's just it's just one little symptom of the problem out on the periphery, really. You know what I mean? Yeah. Without fundamentally addressing the underlying factors. So, all right. So anyway, going back to some of the issues here that you talk about in the book, right? How you see Gen Z being part of altering this, changing this? What's the trajectory do you see? If the window is closing, I'm not sure if we talked enough about that, but like, is the energy and organizational capability there? Obviously, this is not something, and it's never been something that one generation fixes on their own. It's always been across. I think even the division of generations of sort is actually kind of part of the PSYOP, right? This didn't used to be the case. You know what I mean? You look back enough in history. I think that started really post-World War II, where they started like kind of weaponizing one generation against another in order to essentially, I think, separate us from a generational knowledge and wisdom, essentially. Like, oh, don't listen to them. They're older type of thing, right? You see what I'm saying?
No. Totally. And, you know, there are a lot of people that tacitly assume that because it's about Gen Z, that it only applies to Gen Z. It doesn't at all.
No,
of course. It applies to everyone. The distinction is that we were in our formative years when all this happened.
Right.
You know, I was 18 when Trump got elected for the first time, and I'm 27 now, but, I pegged the real start of all this, Trayvon Martin, followed by Michael Brown, that incited this hyperfixation on race.
What year was that? 2012
was Trayvon 12. Brown.
Okay,
Trayvon Martin, and then Michael Brown was 2015.
Yeah.
But I think everything that's laid out in the narrative of the book, everybody that lives in the West will be perfectly comfortable and understand how these events impacted their psyche too. It's not like my niche memoir of like what happened to me. Like there's a few authorial commentaries, but they're very brief and it's only to apply knowledge. Like when I worked at Tesla and saw the H-1B stuff happening as Elon was lying about it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it is very much integrative of everybody. Everybody that's basically red-pilled at the time, probably drew the same conclusion at each of these milestones. And so I think the visceral rage underlying Gen Z is more powerful than the preceding generations, or I guess preceding generations, because we were so close, or at least it appeared that we were so close to all of the general promises actually coming true, right? Like, go to college, get a job, work hard, find a wife, buy a house, have kids. Like, 10 years ahead of us, most people did make that work. And so there was a lot of reason for us to believe that that would be our trajectory. And when it wasn't, that incited this like revolutionary spirit, I think, that's lying beneath the surface on the right. And so I think it's there in that regard. I think our allies in the older generations, certainly everybody that's been paying attention, I'm at the point now where I don't think that we should waste any time on conversions. If you're where you are politically at this point, I don't see any reason for discourse. It's a waste of time. And even if you did persuade someone, they wouldn't be any type of player in this anyway, because if it's, you know, 2026 and you haven't figured out what's going on, when you do, you're just going to be useless because you couldn't figure it out when it was so obvious. So uniquely, I think it will have to be led primarily by the younger cohort or whatever occurs, right? Because that's where the guttural rage exists at, and I think you need that to be your engine. But I do think that there's allies to be had. You know, one thing that's very, very makes people very uncomfortable to think about is you reach a point once you've crossed a threshold to where if you rethought all of your presumptions and they ended up being wrong, then you kind of invalidate your entire life. Like, if you're 60 years old right now and you worked, you know, 12 hours a day, whatever, to earn all this money, and you know, you buy a house, all this stuff, and then you learn that like the financial system is just a total smoke and mirrors game, that your money is digits on a screen, you know, and it's probably all facilitating terrible things, whether through tax dollars or whatever. It's like, that's a load bearing belief. And that if you remove that, your world kind of comes tumbling down. This is the same thing you see with young women who have had abortions or parents who have trans their children. They will never relent on that. And they will be the most fiercest warrior defending that opinion, that action, because if they changed their mind, then they become the monster, or they become the person that wasted their life on something that was meaningless. And so we're going to really have to find a way to deal with that as people do start waking up to the depth of fraudulence that is wrought in everything. And I think Gen Z is insulated from that a little bit, in the sense that we didn't actually devote ourselves to enough to where we're anchored in, and that we're dealing with that kind of, like, I have no problem relinquishing the conclusion that like the old world is gone, right? Because I know, because I'm not so invested to where that would, you know, break my identity or make me regret all the times I missed out hanging out with my kids or whatever like that. And we're going to see this too as time progresses, as like these millennial women totally age out of childbearing years and can't find a husband. Like, they're going to have to get even more fierce in their promotion of feminism, because if they don't, well, then they're admitting that they totally ruined their lives. That's what I'm most scared about in terms of the volatility of emotions across the board.
Yeah. And what happens with them, those women too, is they're weaponized, right? Instead of them spending all their time on kids or later on grandkids or something, their entire existence now is to attack white men, essentially.
You know, like,
you're the reason for that spite. Yep. You know, the spiteful mutants are coming out, and they'll be weaponized, and they'll be people that have means in some cases too, resource, right? They have, because of their position, because of their DI positions, whatever the hell they have. Yep. They have good paying jobs. They have means and resources. It's awful. But again, go back to the point, right? I mean, demographics is the number one issue for us, what we talk about right now, because with that, if we lose that, it's it's a, if we don't have our people, what do we have? What's the reason, right? And so you have so many headlines like this, and, you know, not that I need to reiterate it to you, but we continuously remind people of this, like, keep your eye on the ball, what's happening. We can talk about all these peripheral issues and problems, right? Now, granted, of course, a lot of other demographic people, demographics, races, ethnicities as well also have, you know, decline in their population number. It seems to go hand in hand with modernity or something like that, right? But the point is, in our own countries.
IQ, I think, yeah.
What's that?
And average IQ, I would say.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. If we lose our own countries, we have nothing. Then now we're relegated to a small little segment or a portion of it or something like that. And at the same time, it's something we have to kind of, you know, prepare for. We have to fight tooth and nail against it, but at the same time prepare for a possibility that at least for a period of time, we will be in a minority status in some of our own countries. I mean, America has already, I think, has a couple of the headlines here, obviously, and we know about the replacement migration agenda pushed by the UN, all these international organizations, all these charities, all these churches, all these Jewish orgs, there's Muslim orgs, they're all pushing it, they're making money on it, they're taking taxpayers' money and basically making millions in resettling these migrants in our countries, right? But in terms of what do you think this plays into it in Gen Z as well, right? Because, like, okay, it might be more conservative or right-wing among, do you know if that's primarily among white Gen Z men, younger men, or is it non-whites? How does race and demographic changes play into Gen Z?
In terms of the general right-wing
trends within the generation?
Trends. Yeah. I have not looked at the numbers, but I think whites generally of nearly all, I mean, you got to discount like the total soy boy, like pussies, but anybody that's like self-respecting white guy has become very comfortable with, you know, white nationalism, white identitarianism as a default. And, you know, what's interesting is that was so, I don't know if there was a word growing up that we were more allergic to than the idea of a white supremacist, of a white nationalist, anything that pedestalized whiteness in any regard. But we broke through it pretty dang quickly, like to the point where now I don't think it's even, I don't think it's much of a concern for anyone to outwardly say that. Like, I would say that to anybody that's what I am. And I would have said that when I was anonymous too, because what we found very rapidly is that demographics are everything, you know, and we think about cultures, societies, even the art that these enclaves of people produce, that's all an extension of the underlying mechanics of that people's brain, right? Like, you look at Salvador Dali, you look at Antoni Gaudi, is it a surprise that they're both Spaniards and they produce art in different mediums, in different periods of time, but that actually display an underlying thread that makes sense? Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Raphael, same thing. Is anyone surprised that they're all Italians? And so when it's become clear that the blank slate's garbage and it can't obfuscate things anymore, I think people understand that it's not an option to be pro your people anymore. You have to be. If you value your existence as something good, which some people really don't. I think a lot of white liberal women, I basically don't talk about women at all, except give a critique of feminism in chapter 10. But as we're becoming more comfortable with ourselves existing as a specific thing and allocating, you know, goodness to that inherently, I think it's becoming very common. And I think, you know, from the other race guys that I've talked to as well, I think that most of them are actually okay with it too. And, you know, I mean, not all of them, obviously, but I think a lot of people are getting comfortable with the idea that, yeah, everyone should be for their people, not as it is right now where we're against our people and for another people. We're actively against our people, for, you know, broadly speaking. So that, you know, but all of these contradictions in fundamental misunderstanding of our liberal theology is playing out in a way that is bringing these questions to the forefront. Like the time for these ideas has come. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Good point. I hope that's true. Right. I hope that's true. Yeah. I hope we're in a situation where I know this can go really quickly too. That's one thing, right? It's not the same. It's not information flows faster than ever. You even see, let's take Britain as an example in that. And again, this is not doing some political, like it's all through politics. However, you must, at some point, you must assert political power, right? You must take back your country's ability to organize in some level. You have to have power, right? That's kind of just how it is. And look at the UK, for example, then with the first reform and then just right after restore. I kind of think younger generations, I think, is much less of this like, well, we voted Labour, you know, like Democrat all our life. There was the Workers' Party. That was it, you know, kind of thing. In this kind of schizoid, for better or for worse, TikTok brain world now, here's a new thing. Let's just go all in on that. Oh, here's another new thing. You see what I'm saying? It's like in a weird way that it's anti-traditional in one sense, but at the same time, because of the nature of how everything has evolved, that weakness can, I guess, be utilized as a strength if the right moment shows up, if the right people shows up, if the right organizational skill and capacity shows up, if the right leadership shows up in a sense where they manage to rally people behind them, that support can stream in behind them as long as they get the focus and attention, I guess, very, very quickly, potentially. So I don't stare myself too blind, as you kind of said. I think you talked about this earlier, right? Of like statistics or trajectories of like, well, here, you know, this is the projected outcome of something that can change so dramatically quickly. And there's so many moving parts and so many variables. And if one thing breaks or, you know, the whole house of cards comes crashing down and stuff. So I'm encouraged. It's just about the timing of the thing. It feels like a lot of people are just kind of waiting to see like, okay, when do we, you know, storm the gates type of thing, right? It's something like, you know.
Everybody knows that we need to do something, but nobody knows what to do
or how to do it or even when to do it.
Yeah. And that's the question. I mean, whoever can figure that out and communicate it without getting put in solitary confinement, then, you know, that's going to be the profit, because it sounds like literally nobody knows what to do. But what does that all speak to? The fact that we don't even understand how the levers of power work in this country. We don't know what to attack. We don't know what to, you know, infiltrate and apply our, you know, based mind to, you know, but that's why, you know, what I think is most important in any regard, but particularly politically, is developing a model that actually works and that actually has predictive power, so that you know that you understand what is going on. And I think James Burnham in The Machiavellians does a great job of explaining this type of thinking. I think Schmitt in The Concept of the Political does as well. I think Machiavelli does it the best in The Prince. But rather than trying to get extremely educated on what happened in the French Revolution, while I think that stuff is important, what I think is better is put together a model that you can apply to any data set that comes in front of you. And if it is founded in the proper structural understanding of things, you should be able to get an answer for what is going to happen down the line. And then once you do that, you can understand, okay, well, you can reverse engineer it from there. How did, you know, it's like, take Trump. It's very obvious where the levers of control over Trump reign from. But if you're like a liberal that has never even like heard any argument about like Zog in general, you're so confused, have no idea what's going on. He looks like even more of a bumbling idiot. But so just getting to the heart of what are the fundamentals? What are the mechanical fundamentals? Because, and this is the analogy I use in the first chapter. If a doctor cannot get an accurate diagnosis on whatever your problem is, the chance that he can solve it is pretty much zero, and the chance that he can solve it accurately is definitely zero. So the most important thing, I would rather go to a doctor that tells me exactly what's wrong with me and says, but I can't help you, than go to a doctor that says, huh, okay, well, maybe we'll try this, maybe we'll try that, maybe we'll try that. You see what I'm saying? You want a model that can diagnose so that you can actually adjust and differentiate whatever's in front of you to fix the problem. But until we understand the problem, we're kind of shit out of luck.
Yeah. Even the speed at which the layer of the new or the new problems come at us to create those layers, I guess, is that's altering and being changed too on top of it, right, to make things more confusing, right? But artificial intelligence, it's why some of these leaders, they talk about it quite openly as a super weapon. I think even Netanyahu talked about that. Like, Israel's going to be a, you know, super nation. It was one of the latest clips I saw. We now have access to a, was it super weapon he used? What was the term? It was something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, but it was something to that. Like, we now have, you know, the thing, right? And that can change the dynamic extremely quickly as well, quickly, obviously, as we know. Just the sheer AI slop and distractions that might be out there of just endlessly being lost in some, you know, VR headset world where you can just, you know, you don't like the real world, have no control, no problem. You know, just headset on, just like lose yourself.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people that want that.
100%. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Which breaks it down again into that with all of these things, there is a process of refinement happening, a eugenic process. It's dysgenics, obviously. That's how it started. But it's ultimately at the end of that, therefore, then eugenic. There's a weeding out, right, of just like being lost in trappings and stuff. And it kind of goes back to the issue we talked about, like maybe what we should focus on is quality, not quantity, right? We always feel it's good, like we got to compete with a billion Indians and a billion Chinese or something. Right. Just have more kids. And obviously, it's not a discouragement. Have as many as you can, obviously, right? But at the same time, it's never been about just a mass meat wall, I think, for us as well. Yeah. I think we can go... Yeah. A lot further with quality as opposed to just, you know,
quality. I totally agree. I'm pretty opposed to that argument of just like, oh, just get married, have kids. And first of all, anyone that's saying that has not had much experience with the modern woman, at least to the degree that they would have to know that advice is nonsense. But yeah, practicality and tacticality as well is going to be very important here, because we're not going to get that many opportunities to really strike. So we need to know where the weak points are, how to apply maximal strength and damage. So I think to your point of quality over quantity, like we don't want just like a meat army, you know, of people that totally untrained, no idea. It's like, it's going to be a lot more complex.
How about both? How about that?
Yeah, yes. But what I'm saying is like...
obviously, have as many kids as you can, everybody. Get a woman, have a family. That's the best thing. The part of the reason why we're in this is because of a lot of selfish, you know, trappings and endless entertainment and all like things that have just disassociated us from just a normal life, obviously. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, that is number one. But I think out of that, what I'm getting to, I guess, is that out of our ability to continue to exist by having children, we will still have we have a lot of quality people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and maybe you misunderstood what I meant by that. I wasn't saying don't do it. What I was saying is that alone would not solve.
Correct. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It will like solve, I think the Matt Walsh type, not all of it. Would say that like that's literally all you have to do, and then we'll raise our kids conservative, and then in 80 years it'll be a conservative country. It's like, okay, all right, man.
Well, it was for a while, wasn't it? And that didn't prevent us from getting to the point we're getting. That is the fallacy of sorts of tradition, and of course, obviously I'm a traditionalist myself, but I'm saying of mm-hmm. all the systems we did have, none of them prevented us from ending up where we are now.
Well, that's the best argument against something like the Constitution. And I've read the Constitution. I know many people that like just loud it like you'd never believe haven't, but it's fairly banal. I think conceptually it's obviously like ahead of its time, but regardless, it's undeniable that it either allowed us to get here technically or wasn't strong enough to stop us from getting where we are. So either way, it's invalidated. Yeah. And that's that like 90s liberal type concept too. When people say, I'm a constitutionalist, I want to get back to the Constitution. It's like, well, okay, let's just say we did that. Then go 200 years from there. Do we get right back here?
Yeah,
you know, it's like the real Constitution has never been tried. Like, are we really doing that argument?
Yeah. Well, where I was, excuse me, we're always looking for something that will be, you know, it's just an item or a thing or a button you can press that just,
You know, fix a pill, like, whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the reason why we've failed, you know what I mean? Like, or ended up, because we're not willing to do the hard work. I think it ultimately comes down to we've been too comfortable. And that's why I'm looking around in the world and just like, look, I got younger kids, and I'm like, I'm very worried about the future. I'm very worried about their, like, these people toying with energy and now food supplies and fertilizer. Like, there's a lot of problems here, right? You know, but at the same time, I also recognize that, like, if the comfort of this system just kind of we just print 40 more trillion in debt and just keep it, you know, let's keep it going, you know, kind of thing, that will also be our undoing. That will also, you know, lead us to our extinction, essentially. So, like, rip off the Band-Aid and preferably, in a sense, the earlier the better. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a challenge. And ultimately, we're not in charge. You know, I mean, you and me are not in charge. We can't tell everyone else what to do, whatever. We can influence people. And I think we can talk sense to people. We can reach people. And at the end of the day, it's about what we do and how we affect the things we can't affect. But I think back to the point I said, we still have the reason why we're in the situation we're in is because we collectively, our people, our race, didn't take our responsibility. We allowed ourselves to be bamboozled by cheap calories and endless entertainment, essentially, right? We didn't pass on our stories. We didn't continue our myths. We didn't pick up the tradition in that sense and keep it alive, right?
Well, I think what was particularly sinister about that, and I don't know, maybe you were not exposed to this in the same way that I think my generation was, but they taught us that all those vices were actually good for you. Like that was your symbol of freedom, and that it was healthy, and that you should live life that way. And I grew up believing that to a degree, at least. I mean, I was juxtaposed with like understanding, you know, hard work through sports and things like that. But more generally, it's one thing to say, you know, it's bad to drink, bad premarital sex, whatever, all that stuff, and just not address it, right? Like, that's how I imagine it was kind of in the earlier days, probably post-60s, but still earlier days. But they were telling, from a systematic level, from public school, like, they were pushing you toward those behaviors. And to do that to children is a remarkable level of either willful ignorance or, let's be honest, evil. And I actually do pride a lot of my generation, I don't know about the women, but the men, in breaking that mold. Because, you know, my parents, they're Gen X, and most of my friends' parents are Gen X, and they have no tradition, nothing. Even the religious ones hardly have any tradition. So we grew up in a traditionless world. We're basically deracinated from our true countries of origin. Sometimes even the state of origin that, you know, previous generations had grown up in. There was nothing tying us together to our ancestors in any regard. You know, not to invoke like a song lyric, but it just explains it well. Noel Gallagher, in one of his songs, in Oasis, he's like, we drink, steal, and we lie. Nobody tells us wrong, so we don't know why or whatever. Like, you just do it because nobody says it's wrong. Well, it's even worse than that. It's like, we are told to do it. And you couple that with a lack of foundation, a lack of tradition, and that is just the perfect disaster and the perfect storm to just create a complete crisis spiritually, authentically, meaning, vision, all the above.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, and I can speak to that too. It's a generation of like nihilism, nothing yeah. means anything, endless like irony, innuendos, and it just, you know, yeah. hollowed out entirely. And again, just the way the establishment preferred, as I said, because every elite, you know, preceding us have weaponized the younger generations in some kind of capacity or used them to destroy them while thinking the actions that they're taking are somehow rebellious, right? They're being led by the Pied Piper straight into the trap, essentially. Oh, yeah. And they think like, hey, I'm rebelling. I'm figuring shit out, you know, and then you realize hindsight. No, you're being led along.
Well, you know, I think the best distillation of all that, I'm sure you've heard of this, Friendsgiving.
Right.
You know what that is?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that is like the best example of all of those like rotten ideologies coming together, of people being able to say like, I can reject my familial obligations. I can reject my culture, people, and bring this conglomeration of probably very short and definitely not deep relationships all together to simulate what I should have been doing as a longstanding tradition with people who really belonged to my tradition.
Yeah.
And it's like obfuscating it enough to check the box on it, but excavate all the meaning out of it.
Yeah. Wasn't there a show running called Modern Family? I'm looking for the articles. Yeah. I've seen a few of them, but it's like, family now means anything, you know. It's
yeah,
like, and,
yep.
Mm-hmm. And the interests that you rally around is some niche thing that you were part of some weird subculture online, yep. like furries yep. or something.
And
or,
it's ironic. Yeah, it's always ironic.
Of yeah. course, yeah. Nothing means anything or whatever. And it's yeah. like a desperate attempt at like, yes, it's all simulacrums. It's all fake ideological association or thinking that you're into this one thing and that's now your identity and stuff like that, right? And for the most part, let's be honest, I mean, of course, there's other races that do that too, but it's a very white thing, you know what I mean? Instead of then having your culture, tradition, heritage, race, folk as a central underpinning of it, it's like this band that we all listen to or something, you know what I mean? And that's
yeah.
like part
no,
of your,
really, it's
your
that,
identity.
It's that banal, yeah.
It is. And it was some, yeah, I think it was actually pretty, it was a good documentary. And he was a Jewish guy, Douglas Rushkoff. And so he'd... Inside of that, there were subversive things, but he still pointed out, he might even have critiqued it for the wrong reasons in some cases, but that doesn't mean what he did critique wasn't wrong, right? It was right. Mm-hmm. But it was called Merchants of Cool. It was a PBS documentary back in the day, and he had one more. It was either a follow-up or the one preceding Merchants of Cool. But he did put his finger on that. Like, again, in his view, this was just some, like, veiled, he didn't say it in this terms, but it was like, here's the evil kind of capitalist, you know, white people, I guess, or something, you know, kind of doing this. But he pinpointed the idea of how you market cool, how this became a Madison Avenue, even Wall Street then to a certain extent, industry, right, of like appealing to kids and teenagers and youth or whatever. And it's not just, again, what he, I think, gets wrong there too, is this, they see it as, well, that's about profits or short-term gains yeah. by, you know, BlackRock's and holding companies or something. And it's like, actually, it's not. It's ultimately, it's about control. I even think the money in and of itself is just that's a means to an end. Ultimately, I've always seen it as control, and the way you control people is to deracinate them, right? Make them into a, as part of the, you mentioned it before, right? The gamification of life, or like how, predictability models, or even AI, or a supercomputer running like, and they have these now. Like they've done this for decades. I forget which branch of the military, was it Sandoz Laboratory? It was one of them. They access to these supercomputers, and there's like a little version of you and me in these supercomputers. Now it's way more advanced than that. This is like a few decades ago. But everyone's in there. Every statistical knowledge and info that they have on everyone is in there, so that they can run predictability models. Yeah. Like, if we do this, what happens? What's the outcome, right? But the point is, what I'm getting to is that it's a very complex picture, especially the more differences you have, right? But that's part of the process of homogenization itself. If you can distill down most humans into a few variables or very easily manipulatable, you know, inputs or whatever, it's much easier to control everybody, and it's much easier to predict everyone's behavior as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they don't want to. They want as little broad complexity as possible, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Much easier to control, much easier to push the buttons and all that kind of stuff, right? So yeah, anyway, we're learning this. We're learning it the hard way. But I think out of this will come a much stronger man, a much more sharpened man. And, you know, like it or not, we didn't make up the rules. Nature still rules, even within the weird artificial systems that we now have. Nature is in charge, I think. And for those who don't make it, well, you know, that's what it is. I mean, since refrigeration and antibiotics, everyone survived, all including all the spiteful mutants, whatever genetic deformities that in the past wouldn't have fit into a tribal society that was highly dependent on the function of everyone in it, right? But now everyone survives. All the mutations, right? We're billions and billions of people now. And this is the anomaly. That's my point here, too, right? The period that we're in now, and as absurd that is, that's not the norm. Historically, that it's right. never been like this in any right. kind of capacity. And I think there will be, you know, either by our own, you know, undoing or maybe outside natural phenomena. Who knows? It could be a powerful enough solar flare tomorrow, and it will just take out all the electronics and boom, and we'll reset back to square one. We're back to the Stone Age, essentially, right?
Yeah.
But, however, and I'm not saying that's your idea here either, but we can't sit. Unfortunately, we can't sit around and wait for that day to come. We gotta take right. yeah, take action.
But honestly, it'd be nice. Yeah.
it'd be nice. But it'd be like a shortcut. It'd be like a cheated out of it. I've always felt
right.
No, for us to grow and to learn from it is we have to do it. We have to overthrow this system, or, you know, throw the shackles off of the people that are restricting us, kind of thing, right? Anyway, this has been a great discussion. Really enjoyed it. A lot of good. Thoughts and ideas discussed here. Let us know if there's anything else. You know, obviously, there's a lot of other things in the book that we didn't talk about, but there's something in specific so you feel is both maybe pertinent to the discussion here, or something else just from the book you'd like to kind of bring out or reiterate, or something that we didn't go into yet.
I would say that most people watching here probably don't know who I am, but I've had to censor myself quite a bit on YouTube, obviously, and people have made comments about that in particular, as if I was choosing not to say it for any reason. The book is 100% uncensored. It gets into the Jewish question deeply and explains the mechanics of it, the underlying logic of how it can be applied, how it is applied, the effects of it, examples of that being in place. It shows... Anybody that is watching this probably would disagree with nothing in the book. Maybe a few minor quibbles on the importance of some specific characters. But regardless, the book has all of the receipts of all of this stuff. It has all the quotes, all the articles, everything. So, and it's narrativized too. Like I said, it's through the hero's journey. So you're not reading it like a collection of essays. If you really want to understand have somebody articulate what the last decade did for you, whether you know it or not, just subconsciously, I really think you will get a lot out of reading it. And if you don't want to just get the book, try listening to my video, Gen Z from Liberal to Far Right, because that's the same narrative arc. I use that as the structure of the book. And anyway, so it's the continuation of that, proving, you know, my assertions with actual evidence, but it reads like a novel. It's a nonfiction novel, basically. So it should be a good read regardless. And it's not too long. It's like 230 pages, I think. And Jared Taylor wrote the foreword.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly.
Great honor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, good old Jared, man. We love Jared. Yeah. And there's the audio or a video of it too. Is that his, or are you narrating?
I read it.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, good. Awesome. All right, cool. Yeah, so definitely Arctos is one of the places people can pick up a copy, American History Z, or you can do it, of course, on Amazon if you prefer that method. Either works, I guess, for you. Doesn't matter, really, what option people take.
Yep.
Maybe Amazon. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, great stuff, man. Keep up the good work. Right Wing Coalition on YouTube. That's at the RW Coalition. But you can, I think, if you search for it, it should pop up. And, of course, they can follow you on X or Twitter as well, under the RW Coalition as well. So what do you got? Are you working on something new, videos right now? What's coming up?
Well, for you? I am groveling through the audiobook. I thought I would get it done a lot faster. It's really a grind. So that's really my main deliverable. But I'm, as of right now, just trying to do things like this, trying to get some more exposure, in the space. Cause it really, like, I haven't been around long enough to form too many, distinct alliances, I guess. But then I'm writing on the side essays mixed between current events, some practical right-wing philosophy applied to modern situation. I think I'm working on something right now of over the debate of, is it really left versus right? Or is it really, you know, Americans versus Zog? Or, I think I'll do a good job of articulating what the reality is there, but, nothing distinct on the horizon right now, just kind of doing what I'm doing and see where it leads.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we appreciate your work. Keep it up. And yeah, let us know what's going on. If you have new stuff coming up, I'd love to have you back. Well, I mean, have you back for discussion anyway. I really enjoyed it. So thank you, Joey. I appreciate your time today. Great having you here.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with more here soon. A couple of things I want to close off on real quick here, too. I got a couple of housekeeping things before we let you go. Joseph W., last stream, I'm so sorry I missed your, because you were using DonorBox. New habits. You know, we asked people not to use Entropy because, of course, they lost their payment processor. But Joseph W., he says, yay, Idaho, we visited recently and my kids already want to go back. This is in regards to what I was talking to with Matt Bracken, you know, about the, I guess, situation in terms of, I forget if it was strategic relocation, whatever it was. But anyway, we talked about that Friday, so it was a response to that. Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate that. I'm so sorry I missed it. Feels like an ass because like, it was a big donor as well, and we really appreciate it. And we get another one, a very generous donation from SunDestroy520, one of our executive producers, who simply just said, have a great weekend. Thank you so much, and I'm so sorry for missing those. New habit, I guess that's why. Speaking of which, let's go over to DonorBox. We have got a huge donor here. Albert, as always, holy smokes. Man, appreciate you so much. Albert, you're just incredible. King Albert, huge dono. He says, hi, Henrik. Looking forward to watching this after work. Hope you guys are doing well. Take care. You as well. Thank you so much. Everyone give a shout out to King Albert in the chat for his incredible support. And yeah, as you know, I've said it a couple of times, but we'll keep reiterating it. If you do want to support the show while we're live, please use DonorBox. Don't use Entropy. No payouts from them since January. And it's on hold, I guess, definitely. We don't know what's going on with that. So don't use Entropy, which we've used in the past. They've been very good to us in the past, no problem. But they kind of botched this latest, problem that they had with their payment processor on the back end. Instead of letting people know, they just didn't say anything, and we kept using it. And, of course, that's kind of hard to do when you rely on it. So, anyway, PowerChat.live/RedIceRumble. You can use Cointree or DonorBox.org/RedIceTips. Those are some great options to use. You can, of course, get a membership if you prefer that as well. That's another great way of supporting us, RedIceMembers.com. You can sign up over on Locals. That's RedIceTV.Locals.com. Or you can do it on Subscribestar.com/RedIce. And speaking of which, we actually have a Western Warrior coming up. I've been spending most of the entire day, late into the night, editing Western Warriors. That's coming up here later today on Red Ice Members, on Locals, on Subscribestar. Some very interesting developments and I think deep analysis regarding the situation when it comes to Israel, how they're being, or I should say, what they are doing in order to delegitimize themselves. And this is now true for what the Trump administration is doing with how they're handling NATO and the Strait of Hormuz and all these things. Like, it's like they want the rest of the world to de-dollarize, right? The petrodollar, get off from it. It's a very, at face value, it's a strange development. But it could actually be, there could actually be a wider objective inside of that. And we kind of discuss those things, among many other things, by the way, in there. We do have our Tucker, excuse me, guys. We do have our Tucker segment there, too, which I thought was a good analysis of why Tucker Carlson is such a extremely dangerous individual, actually, in these times. So we'll talk more about that in the Western Warrior show as that's coming up. I do also want to give a shout-out here at the end. Do we have our latest? I think this is our latest. To our executive producers, before we wrap up the show, first out the gates, the one and only King Albert, Arctic Wolf. Thank you so much. We appreciate you so much. We got William Fox from America First Books as well. We have Angry White Soccer Mom. thank you for being an executive producer. Also, thank you to Purple Haze. We appreciate you. Then we got Glenn. Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate your support. We also have President Abunga. Thank you for being there for us. We appreciate it. We also got Good Luck Lab. Thank you for your support as well. We have Number One Jeebs. We appreciate you. Thank you, sir. We have Hungarian Mom. Shout out to you guys, the whole fam. Appreciate you as well. We got Sun Destroyer 520. Hey, sorry for missing your Super Chat Friday. We appreciate you, man. We got the Deplorable Extraordinaire. Thank you for your support as well. Much appreciated. We got Santoso. Thank you, Santoso. Much appreciated. We also have the Boo Man as one of our executive producers. Thank you so much, sir. We appreciate you. Together with Charles Turner Jr. Thank you, guys. We can't do this without you. Then we got our producers. Red Pill Rundown, Yuan Son, Lero Demand. We have Ice Open, Single Action Army, Lord H.P. Lovecraft. We have Trevor, Der Schwabe, Alcyon, Aurelian, Perfect Brute. We have Greg M., J. Barr, Chris W., Skarzinski, Muskrat, Centurion, Scott James Henderson, Deer in the Headlights. We got Joseph W., Citizen Intel, and Ernst Jaeger. Thank you, guys. We appreciate our producers so much as well. If you want to get one of those, you can get it over at redicemembers.com or subscribestar.com/redice. Get a membership, or you can get a producer or executive producer tier right away if you prefer. It's only $10 a month if you get a regular membership, of course. But as a producer and executive producer, shout out at the end of the show. Special thanks from us here at Red Ice. You help us grow and expand as well. So thank you, guys. But yeah, $10, redicemembers.com. Great way to support us, especially now when Entropy has locked all the funds. That helps tremendously. So if you haven't signed up for a membership before, now is a great time to get aboard. If you appreciate what we do, redicemembers.com. You can do it on Locals or Subscribestar as well. We manually activate your account on redicemembers.com because, well, of course, we do have censorship or whatever term you want to use, restrictions in terms of the payment processors that we use. So we use DonorBox on redicemembers.com. So we appreciate your guys' support. But yeah, we'll be back here then with Western Warrior. That's coming up next on the websites and everywhere. Tomorrow we have a stream. And then Friday, as usual, we'll be back with Flashback Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern. That is 11 p.m. Central European time, or 2300 hours. So make sure you tune in to that. Thank you again to Joey Oliver for joining us from the Right Wing Coalition, talking about his book. And we'll be back with more a little bit later today, Western Warrior as a member. And then we'll be back with the stream tomorrow, Thursday. We'll see you guys then. Folk first. Take care. Thank you for joining us. Now, do make sure that you follow us on our Rumble channel for more Red Ice TV on rumble.com or on X at Red Ice TV. You can, of course, go to redice.tv as well. Tune in to our live streams and shows. Flashback Friday live on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern. No-Go Zone Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. We also do interviews, videos, clips. And Western Warrior is available Tuesdays, exclusive for our supporters and subscribers at redicemembers.com or on our Locals, redicetv.locals.com or subscribestar.com/redice. Get a membership, check out everything that we do, and support the show.
Red Ice merch available now. Folk First t-shirts for adults and for toddlers. Fatigues for men. Our favorite, the Red Ice Camper Mug. Or ceramic with black print. High quality leather keychain with solar boat imprint. Our Red Ice hat, one of our best sellers. Pick one up today. Or why not? Gray Auslander Rouse t-shirts for both women and men. We also have Fridge Magnets, Folk First, One Disease, and our black men's t-shirt with the classic red solar boat. Folk First. Get your Red Ice merch from LanasLlama.com. Get an item today. Lana's Llama, proud sponsor of Red Ice.
That's right. Happy Passover, everybody. That's what we're all thinking of, isn't it? Passover, full moon. Today, watch out. Anyway, get a membership, guys. RedIceMembers.com. Western Warrior coming up here soon. almost done editing. It's going to be a great one regarding to speaking to those some of those trends. You don't want to miss it. We'll see you guys. Brad Esmond for the call. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Actually, it's Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Wednesday. That's right. Talk to you later. Take care.